And the story of Ram's appearance is narrated in the great Vedic literature called Ramayana. Valmiki Muni, at one time, you know the story, he was a hunter. But Narada Muni, by his compassion, revealed to him what will be the sinful reactions of going on with this type of life. So hearing Narada Muni speaking and believing him, because he was such an honest and compassionate devotee, he asked, please tell me how I can be purified of my sins and how I can become a devotee of the Lord. So knowing he was too sinful to chant the name of Rama, he told him to chant the name of Mara, the name of death. But by chanting Mara again and again and again, he found himself chanting the name of Rama. Mara, 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 Rama. He was constantly chanting the name of Rama. When he became completely purified, Narada Muni came back to him and described to him the beautiful pastimes of Lord Sri Ramchandra. What happened is Valmiki Muni inquired from Narada, is there anyone who has lived on earth that's truly moral, that's always compassionate to other living beings, that's purely pious, that's so honest, never tells a lie, that has no sinful desires or selfish thoughts in his heart? Is there any perfect human being that is living anywhere in this world? So Narada Muni said, yes, I will tell you the story of such a perfect human being. Narada Muni then explained the birth and the life of Lord Ramchandra in great detail. Upon hearing this, Valmiki Muni was overwhelmed with ecstatic love for Lord Sri Ram and completely purified by hearing this story. One day, Valmiki Muni was in the forest and he saw two beautiful birds. They were cranes by species. One was a male and the other was a female. They were enjoying together very happily when a hunter came and shot an arrow and killed the male. The male bird was laying in a pool of blood. The female bird was weeping and crying in great distress. Valmiki Muni, who previously was a hunter, now he had so much love and compassion toward the feelings of every species of life. He began to cry to see the suffering of these birds. And he pronounced a curse. The curse he pronounced in beautiful Sanskrit meter. It was four lines with eight syllables in each line. He said, may this hunter who has caused so much pain and suffering to these birds when they were just enjoying together, suffer without any peace endlessly. After he pronounced this curse, He felt very, very bad. He was thinking, I should not have cursed. I should be equipoised. Great sages should not be cursing others. So he felt very, very bad. He went back to his ashram and met one of his disciples, who was Bhardraj Muni, and told him what happened. That it's very bad what I have done. I have cursed this hunter. But at the same time, please hear the beautiful, beautiful poetic expression that I cursed him with. And he sang the curse. At that time, Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma told Valmiki Muni that you should compose Ramaya, the beautiful life story of Sri Ramchandra. And you should pass it down to your disciples for the purification and joy of the whole world for all time to come. Valmiki Muni asked, How will I be able to do such a great, great service? Lord Brahma told him that you should sit down in meditation and pray to Lord Sri Ramchandra, and he will reveal every minute detail of his pastimes. And then you should compose it in exactly the same type of poetry as you curse the hunter. Valmiki Muni sat down in prayer to his Guru Maharaj Narada Muni, his Param Guru, Lord Brahma, and at the lotus feet of Sri Ram. And by the mercy of Sri Narada Muni, he was able to see the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra being enacted within his heart. He saw every detail. He was right there, day and night, watching Ram's Leela. He was hearing all the discussions and conversations of everybody around in Lord Ramchandra's divine pastimes. And he perfectly memorized everything he had seen. But then he was thinking, I must speak this great treasure house of transcendental knowledge to someone. But who is qualified to realize it and remember it? This Ramayana that he had memorized in his heart was 24,000 slokas that he had composed. In that every sloka is in that same type of verse that Brahma told him. He saw no one qualified. But one day, the two sons of Sita Devi and Ramchandra, whose name were Lava and Kush, they came before him to offer their very humble and obedient services. Valmiki Muni concluded that these two disciples, being the sons of Lord Ram himself, full of all virtues, so absolutely pure in heart, they never forget anything they hear, and they have full realization of whatever I speak to them. So they and they alone are fit to be the recipients to pass on through Parampara Ramayana. Valmiki Muni sat Lava and Kush down and personally spoke the 24,000 slokas, which are made of 500 cantos, thousands of chapters. Lava and Kush, they sat and they heard it. Valmiki Muni not only narrated it to them, but went into great detail of teaching them how to properly understand it. And after putting his heart and soul into training them, he sent them out to preach the glories of Ramayana. Lav and Kush, wherever they went, they sang so beautiful. Their voices were more sweet than the veena and the flute. They sang each verse, and the words that came out were like ambrosial nectar. They were the topmost musicians. They were so beautiful to look at. Although they were sages with matted hair and tree bark or deer skins, their bodies had the effulgence and the moonlight beauty of Lord Ram himself. So wherever they went, Lav and Kush utterly captivated the hearts of their audience. They came to Ayodhya. They were dancing through the streets of Ayodhya, singing Ramayana. Lord Ramchandra, he happened at this time, as you know, Lav and Kush were born after Ramchandra had already come back to Ayodhya after his 14 years of exile, and he was the king. When he heard these children, beautiful little children, singing so sweetly Ramayana, he invited Lava and Kusha to come to his palace. He brought his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, as well as his ministers and his family members, and told them, please, with rapt attention, hear what these two young sages are singing. It is nectar to the ears. It will purify our hearts. It will give us the highest perfection of life to hear this narration. Everyone sat down where the Janmasthan is now. That place used to be Palace of Ram. Now I don't know what it is. But if you have spiritual vision, then you don't have to go through all these political things to make it what you want it to be. But it's actually the eternal abode of Lord Ram. If only we could see it. So, in that palace, Lava and Kusha narrated Ramayana. They began by describing the glories of Ayodhya. Ayodhya was originally built by Vaibhasvata Manu. Vaibhasvata Manu was at the time one of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu. He was the ruler of the entirety of mankind. And Ayodhya was the capital of all of humanity. Vaibhasvata Manu built this city to be the most glorious city on earth. His son was Maharaj Ikshvaku. Through the descendants of Ikshvaku, many, many great, great kings, one of which was Sagara. One of his descendants, Bhagirath, brought the river Ganges down to the earth. But of all the kings, one of the very, very greatest, Lav and Kush explained, was Dasarath. Dasarath, he developed this city to such glorious proportions. He was such a pious and pure-hearted soul. The city of Ayodhya was like the kingdom of God on earth. Even the abode of Indra could hardly compare to it. because of the piety of the king Dasarath. All of the buildings were made of the most precious stones and jewels. There were beautiful parks. Every tree had fruits and flowers blossoming practically throughout the year. All the animals were friendly with one another. And the birds were always singing very, very sweetly. The Brahmins were very pure. They never made any mistakes in chanting their mantras. The Vaishyas were all wealthy and prosperous and rich. They were very obedient to the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas were always humble and respectful and willing to follow the advice of the Brahmins. And the Sudras were always blissful because they were so nicely being protected by all the other castes. In Ayodhya, no one ever spoke a lie. Everyone was completely honest. In Ayodhya, no one ever was hungry. No one ever got sick. There was constantly musicians singing in the streets. There was constantly people dancing in the streets. Every day was a festival in Ayodhya. And Dasarath Maharaj, he treated every citizen like his own child, with such love and concern. And all of Dasarath's ministers, they were humble, they were pure in heart, they were pious, they were honest, they were very expert in all of their responsibilities. And Dasarath had armies and weapons that no power on earth could come to disturb them. There was such happiness, such prosperity, such luxury in this great city of Ayodhya. But yet, Dasarath was feeling aggrieved in his heart. Because although by his loving service to the Lord, he had created such a perfect city, perfect kingdom, he did not have any son to hand it over to. Therefore, there was no one qualified to take this responsibility of king after he were to leave. You see, in the days of Vedic culture, it was the most important responsibility of a king to train up a son to be the king after he retires. And that was his compassion to the citizens and his service to the Lord. Just like today, fathers, when they have some wealth, it's one of the most important responsibilities they have to have a will by which their estate will be properly taken care of. What to speak of a king who is ruling the world on behalf of God? So he felt that all of his activities in the service of his citizens were incomplete and ultimately a failure if he did not have a son. Dasarath Maharaj had 350 maidservants. And of them, there were three principal queens, Kaushalya, Sumitra, and Kaikeyi. For years and years and years, he tried to have children, but he was never successful. except he had one daughter of the name Shanta, but no sons. Dasarath Maharaj revealed his heart to his ministers. He approached the great Brahmins and sages and told them how sorrowful his heart was, and presented the idea that perhaps if I perform the Ashvamedha Yajna, horse sacrifice, and please Lord Vishnu, he will award me with a son. The chief minister of Dasarath was named Sumantra. He was also his dearmost trusted friend. Sumantra explained to Dasarath Maharaj a story that he had heard. Long ago, Sanat Kumar told the forefathers of Dasarath that there will be a king named Dasarath who will be born, and he will have no sons, but he will call the great Brahmin Rishyashringa to perform a yajna, and by this yajna the Supreme Lord will be born in his son. So Dasarath, he immediately contacted his very good friend Romapad Maharaj. The story of the history is this, that Romapad Maharaj, being a very, very dear friend of Dasarath, had no children. So Dasarath Maharaj allowed Romapad Maharaj to take care of his daughter, like an adopted father or adopted daughter. So Shanta, although very, very dearly loved by Dasarath, was raised by Romapad Maharaj. Romapad Maharaj was the king of the province of Anga. Romapad Maharaj committed a very serious mistake, and due to the offense of the king, the entire kingdom had to suffer. This is a very important philosophical principle to understand. It is a serious responsibility to take the position of leadership on any level, spiritually or socially. Because if someone takes the position of a leader, they are responsible to act according to their duties. Srimad Bhagavatam explains, you have no right to be a king, a guru, a teacher, or a mother or father, unless you live and speak in such a way that those who are subordinate to you never have to take birth in this material world again. Whether you succeed or not is beyond your control. A father can be a perfect Krishna conscious father. Maharaj Anga was a pure devotee, but his son was Vena, a dacoit. But still, it is our duty to behave properly and speak properly. And if we do not, not only ourselves, but everyone around us has to suffer the reaction. So one who is king, if he commits sinful activities, the reaction is shared by the whole kingdom. Now these days, people say that it really doesn't matter whether a king is moral or immoral, as long as he's doing his job.
You know, in the United States of America, these things are being debated recently.
that he's doing a good job, the economy is good, whether he's doing moral or immoral, that's his own private. Externally, that may be somewhat true. But on a higher level, when you take a position, if you do pious work, the whole kingdom flourishes immensely by it. And if you do impious work, the whole kingdom suffers. So due to the offense of Maharaj Romapada, the whole kingdom was suffering terrible drought. This drought was so bad that nothing grew. There was no food. In the kingdom, the city, people were starving. And in the forest, there was nothing to eat for the animals. So what did the animals do? The lions, the tigers, the wolves, the bears, they would just come charging into the city to eat people because there was nothing else to eat. It was terrifying. And you know, when there's no money and no food, even good people can go bad out of desperation. So Romapad Maharaj, he was wondering what to do. So he was consulting his ministers. He was so repentant to the core of his heart. And they explained that there's a great devotee named Rishi Sringa. He is born of the great sage Vibandaka. If he comes to this kingdom due to his purity and piety, it will bring rains and your whole city will flourish. But they told him the story that this Vibandaka, it's a very instructive story.
There was a Brahmin named Kashyapa Muni. Kashyapa Muni was a Prajapati. That means he could just produce offspring in miraculous ways. He could just think about producing someone and some child would be born. So one day he was just looking at the sun and he just chanted some mantra to the sun god and was thinking of a very wonderful Brahmin to be born. So then a son was born and his name was Vibandika. Vibandika, he was such a very, very pure-hearted, saintly person. He was very pleased with doing great, great austerities. He was doing such austerities that Indra became fearful of him. So Indra called upon one very, very beautiful heavenly lady named Harsha and told her that somehow or other we have to break the tapasya of this Vibandika. Otherwise he's going to become so powerful, he's going to take over my kingdom. She said, you have given me the order. I am your servant. I must obey your order. So while he was doing his tapasya, she appeared to him, very, very beautiful lady. And she said that, I have already decided that I must have a child from you. And you're a Brahmin, and you must fulfill my desire. Otherwise, I will immediately die. So he said, I'm not going to get entangled in family life with you. There's just no way. But if you want a child, some of the energy of his body, he just released it and said, take this. And then he went away. Pretty well. So Harsha was thinking, well, I succeeded. You know, he released some of his energy. So therefore, Indra doesn't have anything to fear anymore. But this energy was so powerful, the earth started trembling. From this drop of semen that he left, it was laying on the ground. So she decided, I have to do something with it. So she put it in a beautiful female deer, Hare Krishna, by her mystic power. And in one day, the deer had a child. It was a beautiful little human boy with two little deer horns coming out of his head. Very sweet-looking little boy. So he was named Rishyashringa, which means like a little deer horns. So the mother deer just had this baby, and she came to Vibhandaka because Harsha already went back to the heavenly planets. She did her work. And she said, you know, there's this little baby, and I can't take care of him. Not like me. He's your son. You have to take care of him. You have to be responsible. So he came and saw this beautiful little child. His heart melted, and he understood, I have to take care of him. He was very upset with this Harsha because she just took off and left the child for him. So then he was a rishi with a son. So for some time he went to his brother's house. And his brother and him were very, very good friends. But somehow or other, because he was so austere, his brother's wife really didn't like him because she was afraid that he was going to influence the brother to be too much austere. So she was always harassing him. So he decided, I can't tolerate this, so he left with this little Rishyashringa in his arms. This was his personal realization, according to the Shastras, that living with ladies is just too much trouble. I'm not saying that this is an irrefutable truth. Living with men is also a lot of trouble. But this was his personal realization due to the experiences he went through in life. So every parent wants the best for their children. So he decided, I want to raise this little Rishyashringa in such a way that he never sees the face of a female ever in his life. He was very, very committed. So they went into the forest and he made a hermitage miles wide. And no female species were allowed in that. Even female animals and insects couldn't get in. This is a true story. What to speak of humans? The only people allowed in were rishis, Brahmins and rishis and saints. So Rishyashringa was just taught to serve rishis and do yajnas because it was Treta Yuga. Treta Yuga, yajna was the Yuga Dharma. But he was very much absorbed. And he lived a very peaceful life. He grew up to be a young man, and Vibhandaka was very powerful. It was a very strict brahmachari ashram. Now, Dasarat previously had one daughter. Her name was Shanta. And he had a very, very dear friend who was the king of the Anga dynasty. His name was Romapad Maharaj. Romapad Maharaj really longed to have a daughter. So Dasarat Maharaj, just to please him, he entrusted his daughter to Romapad Maharaj to take care of as she grew up. Now one time Romapad Maharaj was performing a yajna, and he called all these very, very qualified Brahmins. After the yajna, he was giving the Brahmins charity. And he gave one of the chief priests a big bag full of diamonds. As he looked in the bag, he saw one particular diamond was really, really priceless. So he was thinking, it's Brahmin, they don't keep the diamonds anyway. They're just going to give them away to somebody else. So why should I give such a priceless diamond to this Brahmin? So he took that little priceless diamond out and put a big diamond in that was not as valuable. Gave the bag to the Brahmin. The Brahmin, by his powers, you stole my diamond. You have offended a Brahmin. Therefore, I will not allow any Brahmins to do any yajnas in your kingdom. So all the Brahmins left his kingdom. And in Treta Yuga, no yajna, no rain. No rain, no food. So there was a drought. Year after year after year in the kingdom of Anga. It was so bad that people were starving. It got so severe that the animals in the forest had no grass to eat, had nothing to eat. the animals were just coming right into the city and just eating the people. They were so hungry. So Maharaj Anga didn't know what to do. Then some very learned ministers and pious people, they told him that unless the most pure-hearted, pious Brahmin puts his feet on the soils of your kingdom, this drought is going to continue. And as far as we understand, Rishyashringa, he is pure. So you should get him to come. But there was a problem. He wasn't allowed to leave the ashram. So they made a plan. He got the most beautiful women of his kingdom and told them to disguise themselves as rishis. Hare Krishna. And wait till Vibhandaka was gone, and then just go and visit Rishyashringa and somehow try to get him to come. They built this beautiful boat, magnificent, opulent boat, and the river. And one Brahmin somewhere got caught in the mouth of an elephant. So he was like in some emergency situation. So Vibhandaka went to help him. And while he was gone, so many people were asking him for favors. So at that time, these beautiful rishi ladies, they came to the ashram, and they were dancing and singing, and Rishyashringa heard it. So he went, and he just thought they were rishis. And his father told him to serve all rishis. So he was serving them, and giving them food, and giving them water, and massaging them. And somehow or other, there was just something happening inside of him that never happened before. It was just something about these rishis that were different. You know, they told him, we have to go. And, no, please don't go. He just didn't want to give up their association. He didn't know why. So they told him, well, why don't you come to our place? You know, we have a boat. And you can come to, we have a very nice place, good place for rishis to live. And he said, well, how can I refuse your offer? So he got in the boat, and the boat went to the kingdom of Anga. And Ramapad Maharaj and all the people were waiting for him, big celebration. And he got off the boat. As soon as he placed his foot on the soil of the kingdom, immediately rain started pouring, crops started growing, fruits started growing from trees, the river started filling up. It was great prosperity. So Rishyashringa was there, and everything was very nice. And Ramapad Maharaj was so happy. But then he was thinking, what's going to happen when Vibhandaka finds out what we did? The father. So he had the idea, if Rishyashringa marries my adopted daughter Shanta, then we will be part of the family of Vibhandaka. So the marriage took place, and Rishyashringa married Shanta, who was actually the sister of the future brother Ram. So since they were very much part of the family, Dasarath Maharaj sent a message to Ramapad Maharaj, please send Rishyashringa to perform this yagya.
They sent the horse with an army of the best soldiers of Dasarath to travel throughout the whole world. And if anyone did not pay their taxes to Dasarath to give money or wealth for this yagya, then there would be a battle. And only if everyone on earth accepts that he is the emperor and we are the subordinate kings, there cannot be an Ashwamedha Yajna. You have to be the emperor of the planet before you can do this yajna. The horse came back. Then all Brahmins, sages, and kings came to attend, including the great King Janak. Vasishtha Muni was the head priest of Ayodhya, and he made all the elaborate arrangements for this yajna. They had to build palaces for all the different kings that were going to come to attend the yajna. They had to have opulent foods, all facilities for Brahmins. The yajna was performed on the banks of the river Saraya. Rishi Shinga performed his yajna by chanting every mantra with perfect meter and pronunciation, great depth of meditation from his heart. Toward the culmination of this sacrifice, the various demigods appeared to claim their shares of the sacrifice. Then Lord Brahma personally appeared